Sportsnet 590.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forvar. This morning, happy Leafs Media Day. Lots of hockey content to come. Starting off with our insider that's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Frank Sarah Valley, NHL insider and president of hockey content at DailyFaceoff.com. Hey, Frank, it's been a while. How's it going?
Really good, Ailish. Justin, hope you guys had a great summer.
Yeah, you as well. Get up to anything fun? Just relax.
I did. Lots of family time, little trip to Italy with my family. Okay. It was a great summer.
Damn, must be nice. You know what? Like, you're putting in that extra vacation because I know it gets to be super busy nowadays. Yesterday, especially, was Retirement Tuesday and Nathan MacKinnon signing that lucrative contract. You know, that extra 100K, that's got to be intentional, no?
100%. It was intentional. Look, the big thing with Nathan MacKinnon heading into this summer and the ability to negotiate a contract extension, the thing we kept hearing was Nathan MacKinnon wants to set a record. And it wasn't necessarily just for the sake of setting a record. I think part of it's due to the fact that he had heard for all these years how underpaid he's been. And I think that certainly drove him a little crazy. He mentioned it again at the player media tour last week that underpaid is something you never really want to be. And I don't know that this quite makes up for it because I think he's probably paid fairly and accurately this time now moving forward when the contract kicks in next season. But 12.6, he wanted to be ahead of McDavid, wanted to supplant him and set the new bar moving forward that probably will next be passed by Austin Matthews.
Yeah, we were discussing that extra 100K earlier. We were kind of wondering who maybe pushed for it. I think you sort of laid it out that it was probably MacKinnon wanted to set that record. But he also famously said that he'd take less again if it meant winning. Now, they have won, so maybe his stance changed a bit on that. But did he take a little bit of a haircut, even just slightly based on what market value should be to keep things a little bit more flexible for Joe Sakic and Chris McFarlane? Or was this like, you know, what I said in December 2019, yeah, that doesn't apply anymore?
No, I do think there was a little bit of a discount, but it's really hard to say because the market price is only what someone is willing to pay, right? But is there a team out there that had Nathan MacKinnon made it to market, would they be willing to pay 13 or 13 and a half or maybe 14 to get Nathan MacKinnon in their boat? Maybe. And so what you're looking at is probably the difference of, you know, somewhere between $5 and $10 million difference. But when you're signing on the dotted line for $100.6 million and you're someone that's already pocketed, I don't know, $40 million. You're going to make another seven this year. Like, that brings you to almost $150 million in career earnings. Like, what are we talking about at that point when it's $5 or $10 million, the size of your boat that you can buy? Like, what, how big of a difference does that really make? And the difference is, though, that 400K or $1 million or $1.5 million actually means something to the Colorado Avalanche. And that's why when Nathan MacKinnon said last week that he wanted it to be a fair deal, I think that's really what it comes out to be.
You said it, and you said it because it's relevant. You know, you're not going to be the one trying to link everything to the Leafs like we do in this market, but the MacKinnon contract is relevant for this market because of what Austin Matthews is facing, you know, as early as July here, and maybe it'll stretch beyond that if Leaf fans would have it their way. It would get done on July 1st, but it's the new benchmark, what Nathan MacKinnon just signed, and it's probably not a benchmark that will be surpassed by just $100,000. How does the MacKinnon contract affect what the Leafs need to do and are preparing to do with Austin Matthews?
I don't know that it really affects it all that much because I don't think anyone's really surprised. Like, at some point, the McDavid contract was going to be surpassed, and it's not really a shock. Like, the shock to me is how long McDavid held the title. Like, it's been, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years that McDavid's, you know, had that title. And you look at other sports, the NFL, NBA, depending on position, like, those records are rewritten seemingly every summer. And in this case, with Austin Matthews moving forward, like, I would imagine that in 2 years' time, when the contract is up, that, and obviously the ability to negotiate in on July 1, I can't imagine that it would take that long. Kyle Dubas actually addressed part of that in an interview this week with Steve Simmons in The Sun. And, you know, he said, look, we've been in constant communication and contact. Like, I know, you know, and basically saying, I know what it's going to take to get this done. You know, it's going to be expensive. The real question for me is term. Like, how long is Austin Matthews willing to sign for? Obviously, if you're the Leafs, you want to buy as many years of Austin Matthews as you can. But he was a trendsetter last time around, signing for 5 years, and was probably in some ways ahead of the curve in utilizing that term structure to maximize his career earnings potentially. He gets a massive second contract. Now this third contract is going to be even bigger. So how big? Probably starts with a 13 or higher, and then you go from there.
Yeah, if you're giving him the world this time, it has to be 8 years, right? Like, you can't, if it's that top end, to fall short of 8 years, wouldn't that be a failure on the part of the Leafs, honestly, if they can't make this contract the maximum term?
I don't think so. Everyone seems to get hung up on that. Like, if you get Austin Matthews for another 5 years, that brings the total to 13 years. You know, at some point, like, if he wants to be there, it'll solve itself anyway. And in terms of the cap, like, the cap increase is supposed to be so significant in 2 years' time when his new contract will kick in. It's almost, in fact, timed perfectly for the team that's been hurt by the cap and the flat cap in the pandemic more than any other, that, you know, moving forward, like, it should fit in quite fine given what he's been making now and the increase that it would take to get him there.
Frank, we're headed to Leafs Media Day today, and we were sprinkling around some of our most intriguing questions to find out today. What's yours? What's the main thing you want to find out today if you're headed to figure out what the Leafs are discussing today?
Well, it's probably on a smaller scale, but I'm really intrigued by basically the timeline of injury for both Pierre Engvall and Timothy Liljegren. Because I do think there's a chance, and the Leafs, I don't think, know the answer today, but as I hinted yesterday with my reporting, like, there is a chance that Pierre Engvall is out a little bit longer term when they finally do get a timeline later this month. You know, he could be ready for the start of the season, or he could be missing a couple months. It really depends. It's not cut and dry, and they're waiting on a reevaluation. And I think, you know, maybe in some ways less is known about Liljegren as well. And, you know, you might look at the Leafs and say, well, okay, these are two guys that, yeah, they play important roles, but this team should be able to survive those losses. Of course they should. And they've got guys battling for jobs further down the lineup that should be able to fill in those roles. But on a team where they've slotted out every dollar almost perfectly, like, this matters, and Pierre Engvall specifically plays such a dedicated and specific role for your team that you want to try and minimize how long he's going to be out, especially after losing someone like a McKayev last year. So that to me is really critical, and I'm curious to see what the response is from the Leafs today.
At the top of our list, our shared list, was Kyle Dubas. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going on with his contract situation, but we are led to believe he's entering the final season of his contract. Sheldon Keefe is not in the same position. He's got two more years left. Shanahan's got several years left. I feel like the big thing for us is, like, the acknowledgement that Kyle Dubas is kind of on an island here. What do you know about his contract status and where it might go before the end of this season?
I actually know nothing about it. That wasn't on my radar. And I would imagine that in some ways he's linked up to Sheldon Keefe in terms of matching contract length. It's pretty rare. There aren't many examples league-wide that you can point to that a coach would be extended further than the general manager. Pittsburgh right now is the only example that I can think of with the massive five-year extension or new contract that Mike Sullivan signed this summer with the Penguins that extends him beyond Ron Hextall, who only has 2 years left on his deal. So other than that, like, I can't think of another team where that would be the case. And I certainly don't think for optics sakes that Toronto would be in that spot. So my guess, if I were to serve you one, is that those two have contracts remaining of equal length. And I would also say, I don't think Kyle Dubas cares. His sole focus is winning. He's trying to do everything he can to improve the team. I mentioned the spot that this group was in. This franchise hurt more than any other by the flat cap, and that's not making excuses, but when you're banking on a 5% increase every year or four, you know, you don't envision having to get through three or four seasons without it increasing much at all, given the contracts that you've signed at the top of your balance sheet. So they've tried to manage this as best they can. This team is in as good of a spot as you could be, I think, to contend, you know, understanding their lack of playoff success. And their focus is on winning the whole thing, not winning one round. And so I don't think any of the rest of that stuff matters.
Frank, continuing with the contract type discussion, what's the latest on the Sandin situation? What's your understanding of what the future brings for those two?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's another big training camp question is, will Rasmus Sandin be there? Will he find a way to work out the difference that's existed between himself and the Leafs? To this point, it could have changed recently, but I don't think much progress has been made. The ask from Sandin was significant and significantly higher than what Timothy Liljegren signed for. I believe it was higher than what Sean Durzi signed for in LA. And you look at, you know, just as I think Sean Durzi is the best example in terms of market setting, that he's gone out and done already what Rasmus Sandin wanted to do or thinks he could do. And he's done it in a playoff round, which Sandin hasn't done and which Liljegren hasn't really done. That he's at 1.7 for 2 years. Where is the leverage? That's the key word, I think, in any negotiation. Who has it? How do you squeeze it? And I think even with Liljegren's injury, obviously playing a different side, like the Leafs they don't have extra dollars to go around to placate players at this point. If he's trying to send a message, like, I don't know which one is being delivered, but it's probably not helping his case the longer he waits.
We're chatting with Frank Saravelli from dailyfaceoff.com with Maple Leafs training camp opening in about an hour and a half officially. And a lot of the focus there will be on the goaltending situation with Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov coming in. Simply put, Frank, what's your confidence in these two going into the season? And, you know, will this be the storyline that just will not go away for the Maple Leafs this year, like it was at times last year?
Yeah, I could see that for sure. You know, when you look at the confidence level of Matt Murray, it's not high. And I don't know why even if you are someone that has worked as closely with Matt Murray as Kyle Dubas has, I'd have significant question marks. He has a lot to prove. And Ilya Samsonov, he has some to prove, but on a way lesser scale, and in fact took less money than he probably could have gotten on the open market because he wants to prove it and wants the opportunity and thinks that Toronto is a great spot to get it. I love the hunger from Samsonov to come in. I personally project, based on the, you know, what we've seen from both these goalies over the last number of years, that Samsonov will win the bulk of the starts when it's all said and done. But Murray has pedigree and has the Stanley Cups and has the ability to turn it around. We'll see what the relationship's like with the change in goaltending coach and moving forward, how that works. But you can't win without goaltending. Sometimes I think the sport should just be called goalie instead of hockey because it's that critical. Yet when you look at all these teams league-wide, guys, like I'd say there's probably like 22 to 25 teams that are sitting here like, we have some question marks in net. There are only so many guys that you can rely on year in and year out for consistent performance, and there is no more fickle position in sports. So could we see a huge bounce back? I mean, I wouldn't put it past anyone. I just think for this team and this roster, their biggest gamble is in net.
Frank, last one from us here. Yesterday, a couple retirements, to say the least. How are you going to look back on the careers of PK Subban and Zdeno Chara?
Two totally different defensemen, two accomplished and at times excitable for different reasons in terms of their play. Zdeno Chara, just an absolute legend in what he did in Boston, providing the best free agent signing of all time. He provided Boston with a 13-year championship window and kept it open with his strength and his brawn for that long. A Stanley Cup in 2011, Norris Trophy in 2009, six end-of-season All-Star appearances, and two additional trips to the Cup Final, 2013 and 19. And that roar that he got in TD Garden, being in that building, my neck, the hair on my neck still stands up thinking about what that was like when he had the fractured jaw and was announced in the starting lineup. Unbelievable stuff. PK Subban, for a 5 or 6 year period, was one of the very best defensemen in the NHL. The Norris Trophy, his mobility, his creativity, and the excitement that he injected into the Montreal fan base was something to remember. And the thing about PK Subban and Zdeno Chara, two totally different careers. Longevity from Chara, 1,680 games played, the most ever by a defenseman. Subban's career that really ended up being quite short for someone that had so much promise, retiring at the age of 33. Subban's game really fell off in the last number of years, and given that his run of dominance was not entirely too long, like two totally different cases for the Hall of Fame. Chara's a shoe-in. Subban, I think, is probably going to be debated for a while.
Frank, do you like milk?
I do. I like bagged milk, yes.
Just another sponsor idea. We're just floating around. Leafs Jersey Milk.
The Toronto Milk Leafs.
Yeah, that's you're part of that. Lots of fun content online. Just had to see if you're a milk guy. Thanks for joining us, Frank. We got lots to chat about upcoming this season, and we'll have you on lots, so appreciate it.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good one.
Frank Saravelli, NHL insider and president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com and lover of bagged milk. And our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
A little bit surprised that Kyle Dubas not on his radar. Maybe that should tell us to pump the brakes, because
no one is talking about it, that's kind of good then.
No one's as connected as Frank. But all reports suggest that he is in the last year.
He said a couple interesting things.
Sheldon Keefe is not in the last year. Mm-hmm. So they're not tied as far as we know. But again, there could be something, just like Zach Aston-Reese, top drawer. At least we can speculate about that.
That comment, 8 years not being, you know.
Yeah, I disagree with him on that too.
If you can't lock up Austin Matthews for 8 years, it's not
as long as Matthews continues to sign 4-5 year agreements, he gets to have, you know,
player
he gets
power,
to maximize his earnings.
And at
some point, you'd love to have a discount on Austin Matthews, maybe in 6 years, seven years, when he's in the fifth or sixth year of his 8-year maximum term contract extension.
Where the cap is going crazy.
And all of a sudden, he's a real valuable contract at what, age 30, 31, if my math or projections in my head are correct. Like, that would be great. Mm-hmm. But as long as he signs 5-year deals like he did last time, he gets to walk himself into another payday. And again, like, he's kind of the player that deserves that. He's kind of the player that could, like, take take matters into his own hands more than others. Like, we see it in the NBA, a couple year deals, LeBron James, mm-hmm. 1 year deals, just like there was no real risk. And maybe Matthews is in the stratosphere that there won't be much risk, but generally players have just tried to maximize their moment. 8 years, let's get as much secured dollars as possible. Austin might be the guy that says, hey, let's take this 3 years at a time. And that would be, you know, that would be him setting a trend in the NHL rather than...
I was just about to say, that starts with Austin Matthews. That continues with players of that caliber.
And again, it's not great for the Leafs. But that's the type of player Austin Matthews is. And of course, having him is great for the Leafs. But again, his priorities, he gets to call the shot. And we'll see if that includes in max term or it's more like 4 or 5 years. And for Frank, that's not a disaster. And it's not a disaster, honestly, because it, again, gets you 13 years of Austin Matthews at least. That's great. But could we get some cheap Matthews seasons one day? That would be better.
Another thing that I was surprised with Frank was that he thought that Ilya Samsonov would be getting a majority of the starts. I don't know if we were always in the alignment with that. Matt Murray seemed to be the guy that, at least in our conversations, would be starting with that competitiveness, hopefully, between the two of them. But he's high on Ilya Samsonov, which is great because we want that competitive competition, yep, between the two of them, battling it out throughout the first month of the season, at least, to own the net, maybe a 60-40, maybe a different type of split. But
there's two ways that could go. Two ways that could be true, I guess.
Yes, and I know where you're going with this.
Matt Murray, like he has been with Ottawa, mm-hmm. unavailable, not playing well, spent some time in the American Hockey. Like, if it goes really mm-hmm. south for Matt Murray, which again is very, very possible based on what he's done in the last few years, then it might be all Ilya Samsonov. Or, glass half full, Ilya Samsonov just outplays Matt Murray, and the Leafs have a really good goalie in a former first-round pick of the Washington Capitals.
I like that option.
Sounds great, right?
I choose option B.
And Matt Murray give you some good backup starts that you haven't had mm-hmm. in, what, since Curtis McElhinney was denying Sidney Crosby back in 2017, oh, yeah. I think it was? I mean, we thought, well, I guess you had the good backup minutes with Jack Campbell, to mm-hmm. be fair,
yeah,
while
true.
He was a backup.
Yeah.
But again, that position has eluded the Maple Leafs largely over the last 5 years. And, you know, the starter's more important. Great to have a good backup, too. That's possible with this tandem.
I assume on Saturday with the doubleheader preseason games, we'll see each of them start one.
I don't know.
No?
Depends. Well, there's other goalies have to play as well. Might be a little early in camp.
Like, who do we need to see?
I don't know how that'll work exactly. We're going to see both of them.
Yeah, but...
I just don't know if we'll see them both right out of the gates. Huh. We'll see, though.
Be kind of great same day to see them play the same team.
That's the competition we want to see, right?
That's, look at us making decisions.
Little pitcher and pitcher. Murray versus Samsonov.
It'll be fun regardless.
Unfortunately, training camp and exhibition games just don't, like, they just don't carry weight that much.
You know what I looked at? Tickets are like $40.
What, at Scotiabank?
Yeah, if you want to go down and watch the Leafs preseason, you get to see some of the stars play. Like, obviously it's not...
It's your buddy, like, Curtis Douglas?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, in your squad-esque. Like, there's some players that won't get a second with the Maple Leafs this season. But $40 to see some of those guys get out there?
$40 for the tickets?
A couple beers?
$40 for three beers?
Still pretty cheap date night. That's this weekend. Leafs back in action, 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock against Ottawa Senators. Next up on the Wake and Rake, we got a guest. Jesse Rubinoff from Tim and Friends, Sportsnet Bets, is going to join us. I want to know Jesse's betting strategies, his approach. Is he making bank? I don't know. He seems like a guy that's...
What is the guy that doesn't have to get their bets in by 8:30?
Yeah, but what
do they do? Are they more successful than us? Our nerfy Wake and Rake, by the way.
Yeah,
this is the last we'll talk about it. Did not go well.
Yeah.
Buddy,
no
Shane
more nerfies from us. Shane McClanahan really letting us down.
Yeah, he did.
He couldn't have done a Blue Jays-esque performance when he played.
Your lock, however.
My lock did hit. My sneaky lock at 8:54:59. I threw in the Aaron Judge home run. Could be a lockety lock. Boom.
3 of 4. 75% lifetime with your locks.
That's,
I mean,
scary.
Locks should be 100%, but okay. You know, that's besides the point.
Let's see you try to get your lock of the day in there under pressure every day with people messaging you like, I put bank on your lock. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't ask. I said, just $5.
You fit that into a tight window and exactly the pass.
I went with the gut. It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet Next. Crazy about the odds. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Naylor. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin and Ailish, joined by Jesse Rubinoff, Tim and Friends, and Sportsnet Bets, friend of the show. Good morning, Jesse.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I know. What's going on? Welcome. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I said, hey, we'll get you on the show. We're going to get talking some bets, some money. You know, I don't know if you're more profitable than Tim. But are you?
I'm not going to go no comment on that one for now. We're a team. We're a partnership. We have our battle going with SM Bets when it comes to the spreads for football every week. So I'm going to go no comment because we are a partnership. But I'm very surprised that you guys would invite me to hang with you, because I listen to the show and I know, Ailish, you had the Matt Chapman homers call from last week, the Josh Palmer touchdown. I'm pretty sure Justin had the Jays on the money line yesterday. So there's a lot of pressure on me here to keep up with you two.
That's all right. You know, we only called you in because a couple guests couldn't make it. So best of luck. You could earn your keep here, so no pressure. You know the strategy. Obviously, we do a parlay with Unibet every day. We'll have you add yours in today for a three-leg parlay. But I guess we were pondering, what's it like being a guy that doesn't have to choose his bets by 8:30 every morning? Like, what's your strategy? Do some research during the day, or are you a gut feel?
No, you know what? It's all research. And you know, I feel for you guys, because you look in the morning and they don't have the odds. Like, some of the odds aren't there. They're off the board. Like, I'm looking at their matchups right now and some of the Braves games off board. Like, what's going on? And then you get to the afternoon and it just feels like everything is in motion. So credit to the two of you who have to grind in the early morning hours to try and figure out what you're betting on. Like, I'm surprised that you're able to find it at what, 3 o'clock in the morning when you guys wake up? It's ridiculous.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the show prep for the Wake and Rake happens during the show, because we can look at it the night before, but it's tough. Sometimes the lines aren't out there. You don't have lineups. It does, you know, work in your benefit with football sometimes, getting the early line, the early look at it. We look at them on Monday morning. We can feel a little confident that we're going to, you know, the line might move in our favor if we get those bets in early. So, you know, that's one where we can kind of look ahead here with the Thursday nighter. Do you have any leans? Pittsburgh, Cleveland, a 4.5 point favorite right now. The Steelers have been plucky. They've been playing some close games. They've been a bit of a problem, but they've got the Mitch Trubisky thing happening, and it seems pretty limited on offense for them. So anything stick out to you as we continue to chew on this Thursday night affair?
Yeah, Justin, the thing for me that's really interesting is the Browns being favored here when their quarterback, you can make the argument that Mitch Trubisky and Jacoby Brissett kind of cancel each other out when it comes to their quarterback play so far this season. I mean, I looked at the statistics on this, and something that really stuck out to me, Mike Tomlin, I think we consider him, or at least I do, one of the more underrated coaches, maybe in the last generation of NFL coaches. And when he's an underdog, the Steelers are 46-23-2 against the spread. And here you are going up against the Browns, a Browns team that absolutely choked, melted down every word in the book that you can have against the New York Jets. And it's just hard to believe that they're going to be able to bounce back from that. And I know the Steelers have no TJ Watt, which is obviously massive, but they're still a good defense. They still have Minkah Fitzpatrick, and the Steelers D is a good one. So I'm leaning towards the Steelers keeping this thing closer than the line has it right now.
So apparently the Browns held a players only meeting with the defense after their meltdown versus the Jets.
That's not a good sign.
That's early for a players only meeting.
Is it not? And maybe the silver lining is that they're really going to dial it in. They had to have this early season meeting. The stakes are clearly high already. Do you gain any confidence from that, or is it sound the alarms?
No, I can't imagine how after week two having a players-only meeting is a good sign. Like, that feels like something to me that's around like a week 10, maybe a week 13. We're getting ready to make a push for the postseason. But coming off a loss to the Jets, who – you know, I don't want to offend any New York Jets fans out there, but, you know, kind of a joke for the last couple of years in their own right, to blow it the way that they blew it. Like, I don't know, watching that Browns game, it honestly, I'm surprised that they had a players-only meeting because as much as they melted down, I wasn't that crazy in the sense that they didn't do very much to lose the game. They had the Nick Chubb not going down, not electing to take a knee on the one or whatever. He went in to score the touchdown. But then the onside kick, I mean, that happens. So it was just improbable, a crazy string of events to happen. So stop players-only meeting after 2 weeks. Like, that's enough. That's way too early.
So we asked you to prep for maybe a pick for the Wake and Rake today, and a Thursday nighter was top of mind. But I'm sure you've glanced at the Week 3 NFL board. So does anything stick out to you this weekend, something that you and Tim will be playing as you continue to wage war against the SN Bets crew? Is there something that you feel real confident about this weekend?
So it is becoming a bit of a war because we started off 0-2. Against the SM Bet squad, and I think they're 3-1 and we're 2-2 here, and you don't want to get too high or too low. Obviously it's a long season, but as I look at the board, I mean, one of the things that really jumps out right off the hop is the Chiefs -6.5 against the Colts. I mean, it maybe Matt Ryan can summon something, but I don't know, guys, based on the way that he looks through the first two games, that is causing massive problems for the Indianapolis Colts. Because if you don't throw the ball effectively, then you can't allow Jonathan Taylor. The defense could just key on Jonathan Taylor, and he's not going to be able to do what we have become accustomed to watching him do. So -6.5 on the Chiefs is rather interesting there. And I know how bad Kirk Cousins looked in Monday night prime time, but often what we see with Kirk Cousins is when he's playing at home and he's playing at 1 o'clock and it's not Monday night prime time, he's a different quarterback.
There are a lot of factors, Jesse.
Making
a lot of excuses for him.
But ones that don't apply this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, being in a dome and, you know, -5.5. I know the Lions are a little bit plucky, but that's just something that I'm going to keep an eye on right now. But for sure, the Chiefs are the number one that I'm looking at.
Justin and I are completely on the other side. I love the Lions. I'm a Lions stan this year. I think they're fun. They're exciting to watch. I like them. We were hoping that they would be 7, but I kind of some good vibes
going the other way
for the Lions. So we'll have to circle back on Monday about that one. Question from us is how you guys go about choosing who delegates the decisions. Is it Tim, you know, driving the bus, or who is it on the other side for Sportsnet Bets? Is it Tim versus Cabbie, and then you guys kind of like helping, or how do you decide?
So between me and Tim, we each have our own pick. Mm-hmm. And I know that Tim sent in a couple options on the first week, and I actually liked one of the picks that he thought. So he just thought I was tailing him, when in fact I actually liked one of the picks that he sent in as well. So we have our own picks, 1-1. And then I think on the SN Bet side, what they do is they pose it to their community, and the two most popular picks are the ones that they decide to roll with. So I guess depending on how you look at public bettors, Tim and I should probably have a bit of an edge if they're going public and not going any sharps. I know Cabbie might be confused with a sharp every now and then, but if they're going public money, then we should be in control.
For the right type of bribe, I could become part of the Sportsnet Bets crowd, and I could influence them the wrong way if you need help, you know, steer them in the wrong direction. So then they choose a public bet that is just so skewed, and then you and Tim could win. I mean, for the right price, we'll decide what that could be.
Well, unfortunately, that little clip that you just had there can be taken out.
And I know they're listening because every time I do my lock of the day for the last 4 days, somehow it ends up on their Sportsnet betting page, and I know that they're a big fan of my Looney Dogs content, so they're listening.
And you're 75% lifetime with your locks.
Yeah, so no pressure. Okay, Jesse, let's look ahead. Jays, Phillies, you know, anything or anything just looking ahead with the Jays moving forward. You know what? Last night with Ross Stripling, his uncharacteristic performance, are you losing a little bit of confidence? Is there still a question in your mind and takes that third starter role? We debated that today, and the text line, as always, has a lot of thoughts on it.
You know what? That is a fascinating question, and I think one that's going to really pick up steam over the last couple of weeks of the season here. I know the Tim and Friends account also tweeted this out a few days ago, and I thought at the time, unquestionably, it has to be Ross Stripling in a situation like that, but I still believe it, irrespective of one bad start. I mean, you look at you know, what Ross Stripling has been able to do over the course of the season. And it's just a consistency that, you know, Jose Barrios just doesn't have. So I think still, but even though Ross Stripling, you know, not his greatest effort last night, but the offense able to pick him up, and Justin cashes the money line last night that he said on the show yesterday.
I think we might have to go back to the well.
I think so.
With the Blue Jays money line. But I want to, let's canvas the room here before we do our picks. Does anyone have a pick from the Blue Jays and Phillies tonight as their Wake and Rake?
No, but it might be part of my Ailish lock.
You want to
narrative.
Say that, or do you start? Go
no,
with your
you
lock
know,
now. Go
you
with
know
your
what?
Lock now, if
it's,
you're ready.
It's Blue Jays related. So I looked at the pitching matchup tonight, Kevin Gausman and Zach Wheeler, which is pretty good. I'm a fan. But somebody that has just been red hot against Kevin Gausman, Kyle Schwarber, 5 at-bats, 3 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good amount of success. 5 RBIs. I looked
it's
it up.
It's a little bit concerning.
It is a little bit concerning. I looked it up on the Unibet odds. He's actually got only plus 250 to hit home run. I think, unfortunately, for Blue Jays fans, that there could be something there. You know what? If you have someone's number, you have someone's number. You know how to get it. You know how to get it right. I would at least be looking at a sprinkle on the home runs for him, but plus money on over 1.5 bases for Kyle Schwarber is also a sprinkle for me.
Not a lock? A sprinkle, not a lock?
A lock.
Okay.
A lock.
The
a
fifth lock is in place.
The fifth lock is in
Kyle
place.
Kyle Schwarber. Okay. 1.5
Just picture a good Kyle Schwarber night. That's all I got to say.
I got to piggyback off that because you look at what Kevin Gausman's been able to accomplish this season. Like, one of the things heading into the last month of the season that he's been exceptional at is keeping the baseball in the ballpark. But unfortunately, over the last 4 games, he's allowed 7 home runs.
Uh-oh.
So when you've allowed 14 over the course of the entire season, but 7 in your last 4, it feels like something might be going on there, whether the offense is sitting on a particular pitch or whatever it is. And then, Ailish, you combine that statistic with what you just told us about Kyle Schwarber. The dude's got 40 bombs, hit one last night. I mean, which is ridiculous, that 40 bombs. Like, oh, ho-hum, like Aaron Judge has 60, which is insane. Mm-hmm. But Kyle Schwarber knows what he's doing at the plate against Kevin Gausman, and hopefully Gausman can rein it in, not hopefully for your bet, but hopefully for Toronto Blue Jays fans everywhere.
A solo home run's fine if they find a way to just get more than 1 run. It's a win for the Jays.
I think one other thing, like, you know, it's, we got sort of a coin flip scenario. The Jays are, what, minus 110-ish on the money line? Plus 100, actually, on the money line. So if I'm going to play anything,
that moved, it was pretty much a coin toss.
Yeah, I would take the plus money on a coin toss. Maybe that's worth something. But I think the better bet might be over 8 runs, minus 118 right now. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't watched much Philadelphia Phillies baseball, admittedly.
Did you see what happened last night?
But they didn't look like a playoff team. They look like a sloppy team that could, you know, maybe take advantage of, you know, they certainly took advantage of some pitchers from the Blue Jays standpoint yesterday. But it feels like there's some offense there, but there's some mistakes to be made from the pitching staff and defensively. I feel like this could be not a repeat of last night where it was, you know, 28 runs total, 29 runs total. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we could clear 8. So if I was to play anything, I think I would lean the over in the Blue Jays.
But if you tease
tonight.
It up to over 8.5 for plus 100.
Yeah.
And if you play both of those, the Jays and the over at plus 100 each on Unibet, so over 8.5.
Plus 265.
Well, I feel like pretty good opportunity to cash both bets. But if you win just one of two, you're even, Steven. You're feeling all right.
Justin, to your point, about a month ago, Mets broadcaster Keith Hernandez said he just doesn't want to watch Phillies games anymore. He's going to take the day off when the Mets play the Phillies because the Phillies don't play a good brand of fundamental and defensive baseball. And obviously, you know, we watch a lot of baseball, but primarily we watch, you know, Blue Jays games, and it's hard to keep track of every single team in the league. So you take Keith Hernandez for his comments for what they're worth. And yeah, I guess, you know, the Phillies might be a little sloppy, but last night, like, I guess you see exactly why Keith Hernandez said what he said, because that was a ridiculous performance when it comes to fundamental and defensive baseball last night.
Just wild that that's a playoff team right now. Like, I was watching thinking like, oh, man. I mean, the situation is much better for the top end of the NL wildcard chase because I think they're going to be able to handle whoever that might be, the Phillies, in the first round.
How about Garrett Stubbs, though, with that final strikeout? I thought that was hilarious. He's throwing like 34. Mm-hmm. And then bottom of the pitch, where did he throw that one? It was like 80-something.
Down and in.
And everybody was laughing. I thought it was awesome. I mean, a player position pitching is always a fun little treat.
Feels like Danny Jansen was the right guy for that to happen to, too.
Smart.
Like, he gets it. He's a catcher. He enjoyed it as well.
Good theater. Okay, Jesse, what are you liking today? We'll let you lock in your wake and rake bet first.
All right. Why don't we go Vladimir Guerrero Jr., despite all the criticism that he's had over the course of the season, which is crazy because you look at his numbers and I always say you go back on Vladdy's career and you're going to look back on his numbers and he's going to have 30-plus homers, 100 RBI at least probably every single season. Yet when you compare his season this year to a year ago, it doesn't hold up quite as well. And that is why I think a lot of people have been all over Vladdy to sort of get going here as we come to a close in the season. And he's currently on a 13-game hitting streak, even though he has shown some frustration in the dugout over the last little while. But I think he's heating up. He's got a couple homers in the last week or so. So I'm going to go Vladdy over 1.5 hits today, which is plus 200 on your bet today. So let's keep the hitting streak going, Vladdy, and make it a cool 14 games. He's heating up down the stretch.
Okay, we're chasing a big parlay today then. So we got a plus 200 in the holster already. I'm going to take an old friend, Robbie Ray, with the Seattle Mariners in Oakland tonight.
Must win.
It's going to have to be it's going to have to be on the run line minus 1.5. I think it's minus 120 right now on Unibet. I just feel like, you know, the Mariners have sagged a little bit, it seems, and it's, you know, they're the dangerous team. And I think they probably have ambitions of getting out of that final wild card slot. They're probably okay with the Orioles falling back a little bit, but they're going to want to string some wins together to put themselves in the best position they can. They got their ace on the bump or one of their aces on the bump. So I feel like Robbie Ray can, you know, have a good start in Oakland, keep in that pitcher-friendly ballpark, spin a gem, and the Mariners cruise to a victory over Oakland. That'll be my late game or late night addition to the Wake and Rake.
Before I give mine, I want to ask Jesse who his preference would be if he could choose between a Blue Jays wild card matchup, because the Seattle Mariners were one that we sprinkled around. We had John Morosi on the show and he was not confident in that matchup. What's your priority here?
Anyone but the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, he was completely not in alignment. He wanted them.
Yeah, I can't just, as you know, following the Blue Jays for as long as I've followed them, one place you do not want to go if you're the Toronto Blue Jays is Tropicana Field. That place over the last decade plus has just been a house of horrors for the Blue Jays. And I get that there is something to be said for maybe going there, overcoming some of the demons of years past. But there's something about the Rays organization where they're just able to squeeze everything out of guys that you've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're the only franchise in baseball that's able to accomplish that. And there's something about watching Kevin Cash sort of think the game through in the dugout that just always makes me nervous. Like, what does he have up his sleeve? What trick does he have that's coming that's going to throw a curveball, no pun intended, towards the opposition? So I think when you come to who the Blue Jays could potentially face, anyone but the Rays, irrespective of the fact that Robbie Ray was trending in Canada yesterday because of the news of the border situation. So,
well, we get a taste of Toronto Blue Jays at Tropicana Field starting Thursday, tomorrow. So maybe they'll help change your mind and the confidence level or not. Okay, so my Wake and Rake addition here is between the Boston Red Sox and the Cincinnati Reds. So they're matching up tonight. The pitching matchup is Connor Siebold and Chase Anderson. You might remember Connor Siebold from an appearance against the Toronto Blue Jays where he had 9 earned runs Well, his ERA right now, let me just tell you his ERA. It is 11.9.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's, yeah, not, I would say probably not great. Seven earned runs against the Jays that one game. He also have seven earned runs against the Yankees before, so putting his ERA quite high. I'm not seeing much confidence in him. And then Chase Anderson on the other side still has a 6.4 ERA. So the over-under on that game is pretty high. It's at 10 flat, but I'm going to do a first three innings over. It's over 3.5. When you look at how those games start between these guys, it's plus 120. So plus money on and over in just the first three innings. Statistically, looks like it could be a thing. A feeling like tonight could be high scoring in multiple games throughout the MLB. So that's fun for the fans, but not for the pitchers. When you put our parlay together, over 3.5 runs in the first three innings between the Sox and the Reds. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. over 1.5 total hits. And the Seattle Mariners on the run line. This is probably our highest Unibet parlay.
That's plus, so much fun.
Plus 1,114. That is a hefty parlay. Jesse, you're not kidding around when you join the show. You're really getting the listeners some money. They're going to either love you or hate you, all right?
Yeah, I mean, again, no comment until tomorrow. We'll let the results speak for themselves. But, I mean, that's thrilling. Plus, what is it, plus 1,000?
Plus 1,114.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it.
I like it. Jesse, appreciate you joining us this morning. Hopefully you come back with a 1-0 record on the show.
That would be lovely. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, Jesse. Yeah, that was the Unibet Wake and Rake plus 1,114. I'm liking it a lot. Hopefully get the listeners some money. That was Jesse Rubinoff from Tim and Friends and Sportsnet Bets joining us. Justin and I headed down to Leafs Media Day today. We'll be bringing all the storylines for you tomorrow morning. And then Jays and Phillies finish their two-game series tonight. 6:45 start time. A little bit of a bump earlier up, so you can catch.
I love it. Shout out to the Phillies for employing that extra 20 minutes.
It makes a difference when you're getting up at 4.
Although that game persisted last night.
Yeah, it was just ended already. Please, yeah. End it. That was us for the Fan Morning Show this morning. We'll tune in with you guys tomorrow. That was the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. The JD Bunkus podcast continues. That's next. Thanks for listening.